This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Tree Lin, and with me today, I have two guests, one of whom I haven't seen in a while and one of whom I see every week, Dr. George Lee, our doctor in the house. Hello.
You made it sound like a bad thing.
Nonsense. If we didn't want you back, we wouldn't ask you back.
Absolutely. Well, when you see me, then it reminds you that this is the last show. You're going to have the whole weekend, and it's going to be wonderful from now on, right?
You're the weekend doctor.
Absolutely. I'm your last show, the doctor before your weekend, really.
And joining you in this today is Gu Chui Hung, registered dietitian. And it's been a while. How have you been?
I've been good. Yeah, good to see you. Yeah, long time no see.
We have a dietitian on today because we're talking about a sugar tax. And I think just saying that might cause some people to recoil because people love their sugar. But the World Health Organization has added its support to countries that place a sugar tax on soft drinks. A new report from the body has found that raising prices by 20% or more results in lower consumption and improved nutrition. Previously, they'd advised a lower sugar intake, but they'd stopped short of backing tax measures, and now they're upping their game. Before I get to both of you, here is Dr. Francesco Branca, Director of Nutrition for Health and Development at the WHO.
Last year, WHO released its new sugar recommendation, and it was basically indicating that we should not exceed 10% of energy intake from free sugars, but we should not exceed less than 5% for additional health benefits. And then we've been working on policy measures to achieve this, and there are a number of policy measures. One of them is the taxation of sugar-sweetened beverages. We now have interesting data, and we have analysis done by different countries. We now have about 9 countries who have established this taxation, and we're starting to see the effect of these taxation levels. So the report comes now because we are starting to see some of this hard evidence about effectiveness of these policies.
And do you agree with him? I mean, is this sugar tax a good idea?
Wow, I think that will be a good question to ask the general public in the Klang Valley, right?
If you've got, if you would like to weigh in on the idea of a sugar tax, or just call up and let us know if you have a sweet tooth and you don't want to give up your sugary treats yet, that number to call is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Chui Hung, perhaps we'll start with you. I mean, how did you receive this news when you read about it?
Well, I'm completely supportive of the idea, because I think Malaysia is one of the fattest nations in Southeast Asia. I think about, depending on what cutoff points you're using, I think 50 or even 60% of the population is actually either overweight or obese.
Right.
And one of the contributing factors is excess calorie intake contributed by sugar. So by implementing a sugar tax, that's probably a way of encouraging the manufacturers to cut back on the amount of sugar in the produce. And by doing that, the cost will be cheaper, and then people will be tempted to buy something cheaper to use. Yeah.
Well, Chui Hung, I mean, obviously, there will be lots of people who support and oppose this, because some people who oppose it and say, you know, this is a taxation doesn't work, namely probably the industry who actually produce these sugary drinks. Let's get back to basic a little bit. I mean, the WHO pointed out a little bit of, say, 10% of total caloric input. How much does that translate to how many teaspoons of sugar is recommended? Because they actually said 5% of total daily calories. How much would that translate to?
Okay, let's take an example of an average adult who needs about 2,000 calories. So 10% of that would be about 200 calories, and that works out to about 50 grams of carbohydrates, well, 50 grams of sugar. And if you divide that by teaspoons, you get 10 teaspoons of sugar.
That is 10%?
Yes.
Okay, so
there's still quite a lot.
Yeah, well, so basically, what the argument is that majority of us consume more than 10 teaspoons, and what WHO recommends is less than 5 teaspoons.
Yeah, the lower the better.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Because sugar is actually empty calories. There's no nutrients whatsoever. A lot of people think, oh, if I don't take sugar, I need the carbs. Mm-hmm. I need the energy. But there's no added nutrients, because if you take starch from rice, bread, carbohydrates convert into sugar. So you don't actually need to take sugar per se. So there's no added nutrients in them. So
except that people like how it tastes.
Yes, yes.
We have Wong on the line. Good afternoon, Wong.
Hi, Wong.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, you have a question?
Yes, who am I speaking to, please?
You're speaking to Lynn, but you can speak to our guest today, Dr. George or Chui Hung.
Okay. Dr. George, can I pose a question to you?
Sure, sure.
But I will just give you a short summary.
Okay.
I'm 60 years of age. My height is 5 feet 4.
Uh-huh.
I'm quite still physically active. I play games regularly.
Great.
My weight is now is 78. I was as high as 85.
Mm.
And the doctor has advised me to cut 10 kg minimum.
Mm.
For the last 2 years, I have managed to bring down to 78. And it has stayed at 78 maximum.
Mm.
I have reduced my sugar. I have reduced my carbohydrate intake. But I wanted to know, find out any other ways I can do to further reduce my weight.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. That, so if you listen on air, then, you know, Chui Hung is going to help me out to explain to you. You know, obviously you've tried very hard. You know, you've reduced your weight from 84 kilo to about 78. And when, you know, at some point it will stay stable, right? Okay. Does he need to reduce it anymore if his BMI is reaching kind of like, about 20, it will be about 26, 27?
Actually, for the Asian population, your BMI, you should be targeting about 23. The range should be about 19 to about 23.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why if he's a BMI of about 25, 26, there's always scope, you know, that you can always reduce a little bit more. And just a 10%, a 5 to 10% weight reduction, you can actually see benefits from health perspective, you know, improved blood pressure or diabetes or various other conditions. So he will gain the benefit out of that.
Okay.
We still have Wong on the line.
No,
I did want to know, I mean, are there any areas of your diet that do you really think that you have cut to the fullest of your ability? Are there any areas of your diet that you're finding a bit problematic or, you know, any problem areas?
Honestly, I'm quite, if I should say, quite disciplined in my food. I've reduced my sugar intake. Normally, I take a milk and drink. I put 2 teaspoons of sugar, but I've reduced it to 1 teaspoon. Okay. I've also reduced on the creamer. But that creates problem for my gastric sometimes.
All right, okay. I mean, is that true that if Wong actually, let's say, totally abolish sugar intake at all, is that dangerous for him?
There's no danger in omitting sugar in your diet. I mean, the good thing about taking sugar out of your diet completely is just extra calories which you can just take out. So if you want to reduce the energy intake, that's one of the good ways to do, taking sugar out. If you're used to taking something sweet, then the alternative is to use artificial sweeteners. And there's a lot of various types nowadays. You've got stevia, you've got aspartame, and you can use that to sweeten to help, you know, the
to help
taste.
You to have the crave of sugar, to help you solve the problems of the sweet tooth, but yet doesn't put on the calories.
Yes, that's right.
Are they dangerous, these sweeteners?
The safety recommendations, actually, you actually have to take a huge amount, like for aspartame, it's like 50 milligrams per body weight. So if, let's say, you are 70 kilos, so you need to take about, 3.5 kilos worth of aspartame, which is a lot. So you won't reach that level where it's hazardous. So the small amounts in your drinks, that's fine.
Thanks
for the call, Wong.
Hello.
Thank you very much. I hope that answered your questions. That maybe cutting down further on your sugar intake might actually help you just to decrease it to optimal level.
On that note, and this is my personal sort of irritation, I think, when it comes to sugar. How much sugar are we actually consuming? Because we act as if we're just talking about sugars that we voluntarily add to our food, right? We're acting as if all the sugar we eat is measurable in teaspoons. But the truth is, a lot of it is hidden, right?
Yes, that's right. In fact, there is a small benefit in sugar because it helps to sweeten drinks, for example, like milk, and make people drink milk because milk has got benefits in terms of calcium content.
Yeah. Okay.
And people don't like the taste of milk. I mean, some people don't like the taste of milk. And
or soybean,
that's
for
right.
example.
So they might sweeten it a little bit just so that you know, people don't mind the taste and they will consume it. So there is that little benefit there in taking a bit of sugar to help.
Like just what Lynn was talking about, like, and I don't add any sugar into my drinks or anything like that. Mm. But, you know, if there's a dessert that's available,
yes.
or, you know, if there are noodles that's around.
It's even in your sauces.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. So how do I know, you know, because for someone like Wong and myself, I would just claim that, look, I haven't really consume any sugar. But the reality is that how do I know that how much of my carbohydrate or the sweet things that I've been taking actually convert to sugar, and how do I calculate that?
Actually, this sugar tax came about because they identified that one of the contributing factors to obese teenagers was actually high sugar intake from drinks.
From soda.
That's right.
Yeah. So American Holland soda.
That's why the tax actually is zoned in on sweetened beverages only, because your one can of Coke can contain about 70 spoons of sugar. And you'd be surprised, even your glass of juice can contain close to the same amount as your Coke. So don't think just because I'm having fruit juice, it's supposedly healthy, and if you drink lots of it, then throughout the day, you're actually getting 7 teaspoons, one cup, another 7 teaspoons here. So if, let's say, you drink 3 cups in a day, that's easily 21 teaspoons of sugar already, and that's more than the recommended.
Oh, well, yeah, that's quite surprising, right?
Yeah.
We have someone on the line now who is against the sugar tax, though. Good afternoon, Indra.
Hi, Indra.
Hey, good afternoon, yeah. Dr. George.
Yeah, good afternoon.
And Lee Chui Lin and the guest speaker. How do I
Chui Hong. Yes.
Chui Hong. Okay. Thank you so much for bringing this topic online. I'm against the sugar tax simply because I think it'll have a spiraling effect on confectioneries, bakeries, and everything else. And even the restaurants are going to cost even more. I feel if somebody wants to cut down sugar, he or she should cut the sugar down whether there's tax or not. Because tomorrow, we will have to have a fat tax. A butter tax, an oil tax. Now, where do we go from that? And the man on the street cannot afford things like that because things are already spiraling, Dr. George.
Absolutely.
Indra, if I could just interrupt you to say, I mean... The hope here is that the sugar tax would impact manufacturers, not necessarily the man on the street. And an argument could also be made that costs of diabetes, the cost of living with the diseases that can come of sugar consumption would also spiral and could also cost a, you know, provide a heavy burden on people.
Yes, on people. And you know what? Manufacturers, you and I know, manufacturers are not going to just cut the sugar and keep quiet and that they're going to pass it to the consumers like you and me.
Mm.
And that's what the Indra, what you mentioned is true. The food manufacturers. See, I had this conversation with a probiotic company once because they sell their low sugar range more expensive than the regular option. And I said, why do you actually have to sell that more expensive? Because you actually use less sugar, isn't it? And they said, no, they have to use a different type of sugar. They use fructose, so it's you still get the same sweetness. So you did actually reduce the amount, the taste is still the same, the sweetness is still the same. It's just that the content of the sugar they're using fructose instead.
Yeah. Another thing, aspartame and the artificial sugar, according to research, according to what I read, is actually carcinogenic. And it will not reduce the craving of sugar or the craving of sweetness in a person.
Now, when you mentioned about carcinogenic, I mentioned the levels where it becomes carcinogenic. But if you're talking about taking 3.5 kilos of aspartame as per, compared to just taking one tablet of your aspartame per day or two,
then there's the risk is negligible.
It's very, very small.
I mean, I mean, Indra kind of like highlighted something that was quite interesting because I remember in the Health and Living event that you guys held, and I remember Mira actually posed this question to our minister to say, Mr. Minister, are we looking at sugar tax? Because we are facing a huge amount of people with diabetes and obesity. And he actually said, of course, and if the evidence is there, then that will be the case that, you know, they'll impose on it. However, in our country, we actually have subsidies, right? Okay, because all these are considered as sin tax, you know, like, you know, what Indra is concerned about is when you have one sin tax of alcohol, gambling, or, you know, and that sort of thing, and now extend to sugar, then eventually you'll go to fat and everything like that. But, you know, what's your view whenever you attended the meeting that, you know, the minister actually said, oh, we have to wait and see what other people are doing? What do you think about that?
I feel sometimes that I am not, because I can, I think, afford that sin tax when it comes to sugar. And I think all of us in this room fall into that category where if something were to go up by a ringgit or two, we would complain, but it would not, you know, completely ruin our budgets for the month. So if you ask me what I would do, I would absolutely go with the sin tax,
right,
for sugar, more so than fat, because fat, you could argue, there are healthy fats. There are no healthy sugars, so I would
You can completely omit it. But the thing is, I think it's how it's implemented. Like in the UK, I think it's only on sweetened beverages. They're actually going to tax, for those which contain more than 5 grams per 100 grams, that's one level of tax. And then if it's more than that, more than 8 grams per 100 gram of drink, they will impose a level 2 tax. Now, I think that is a very well, I mean, that's a better way of doing it, because you're not just doing a blanket tax on anything which contains sugar.
Or because, the raw ingredient.
Yes, that's right. Because when they did this study in America, where they looked at what is the main source of sugar consumption, it's actually sweetened beverages. So it's easy to target sweetened beverages. And in Malaysia, it's the same case too. Our sugar consumption, the main contributor is actually sweetened beverages, and particularly chocolate-flavoured beverages.
Mm. I mean, when you said that, you know, the fact is that when George Osborne announced this in the budget in May 2016, it actually said that, you know, 5 gram per 100 mils of a beverage will be taxed 18p, and then also 8 grams per 100 mils will be taxed 24p. And, you know, what is proposed also that pure fruit juices, milk-based drinks, and then such as milkshakes will be completely excluded.
Yes.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. In fact, straight after his announcement, you know, one of the MPs, someone called Will Quince, actually said this is a very patronising, regressive and nanny state at its worst. You know, so can you, what do you think about...
They're obese too.
Yeah, well...
No, as in the United Kingdom, they are.
I mean, you know, so on one hand, somebody is, you know, the government is trying to control the health of a nation. On the other hand, over-controlling might be something that is interesting to argue about.
And on that thought, we will get Chui Hung's opinion on that after this. But we'd also love to hear from you. I mean, would you be keen on a sugar tax, or are you happy to see this continue? Do you think that we consume too much sugar? Because I certainly do. Call up and argue with me if you want. That number to call is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, two guests, our regular doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, Gu Chui Hung, registered dietitian. Chui Hung is here because we're talking about how the World Health Organization has thrown their weight behind the sugar tax, the idea of taxing sugar, specifically sugary drinks, I think is where we're looking at. And we're asking you, do you agree with the sugar tax? Do you think that it's a good idea? Do you think we take too much sugar? For that matter, do you want to defend sugar? That number to call, 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have LTY on the line now. Good afternoon, LTY.
Hi, LTY.
Good afternoon, Lee. It's been quite some time I called you. Good afternoon, Dr. George.
Good afternoon, LTY. So glad to hear your voice.
My question is this. I'm comparing sugar and milk. In your opinion, do you think milk is better than sugar? By the way, I don't drink any soft drink, so I'm a bit, you know, A bit safe from that sugar.
But the thing about Malaysian is that we say we don't drink any soda, any soft drinks, but we drink a lot of teh tarik. That is a problem, you know, because, you know, if you tax the soda industry, but we have a huge number of people who drink teh tarik.
Dr. Josh, when you drink teh tarik, korang manis, all right?
Okay, that's a good idea.
Korang manis, you say, three spoons of milk, you take one spoon.
Okay.
Can you adjust that?
Yeah, right? We'll try to do that. Thank you.
I want to ask you about this energy, especially for elderly people.
Okay.
How much actually calorie should I take? I'm 74 years old already. My estimate is about 1,008 lah. Is it fair enough for elderly people? Thank you,
Chui Hong. That sounds like a reasonable amount, but it really depends on your weight, your age. But it's just a quick
weight.
Estimate.
Let you know my weight, okay? My age is 74. I'm 5'6". My weight is about 58 kilo. 58, all right? My waistline is 34, all right? My BMI is about 22 point something, all right?
Yeah, 1,008 sounds about right. Yeah.
Thanks, LTY.
thanks. Thank you very much.
So, you know, sugary drink or milk? That's what LTY asked.
Oh, his question. Sugary. Well, definitely milk would be better because you get your calcium from there. One glass will give you 300 milligrams of your calcium. Manufacturers have produced sweetened milk. So if you look at the carbohydrate content, I think it's roughly about 2 teaspoons per mug extra sugar just by getting flavored milk. If it makes your child drink milk, there is some benefit in it. If you don't want them to take so sweet milky drinks, what you can do is you can mix it half and half with milk, plain milk and flavoured milk. That's what I do with yogurt sometimes also because yogurt is good. It's a good source of probiotics, calcium and everything. But plain yogurt is bland. Nobody likes plain yogurt. So people tend to choose flavoured ones. And if you look at the sugar content, your one small tub can easily have an extra 2 teaspoons, if not 3 teaspoons of sugar, apart from the milk sugar. So it's a lot of extra sugar there. But, you know, you can't like say, don't take sugar completely. So the other alternative is like I mentioned with milk, you can also mix half and half. So plain yogurt and your flavoured ones.
Just and you
so
could eventually move that ratio along.
Yes,
right? You start
right.
at half and half
that's
and
right.
you eventually go to 70-30.
Yes.
That's the whole Kurang Manis thing.
Yeah. It's ultimately, it's getting used to taking less sugar. Because like I mentioned just now about the manufacturer where they didn't cut back on the sweetness. I mean, if we want the whole nation to start eating healthier, we actually have to get the manufacturers involved also and then get everyone to just cut back the amount of sugar in their cereals, in their milk, in their drinks, everything. But it's not just a one-prong action. We actually have to do it from various sources. I mean, the government pushing, the schools, from homes, you know, the family, everybody has to be involved in it. Yeah.
We have Timothy on the line now. Good afternoon, Timothy.
Hi, Timothy.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I, frankly, am a pretty health-conscious type of guy, so I don't really take much sugar. But just to discuss the idea from the national point of view, not too long ago, we were actually subsidizing sugar.
Yes.
2 years, and we removed that.
Thank goodness.
The question is, are we really ready for the sugar tax? And one point I wanted to think about is, a lot of the sugar intake, I think Malaysians take in is actually through drinks prepared outside, you know, like typically mamaks where all the drinks are really sweet. So even if you have sugar tax on and just say carbonated drinks, how can you actually address the second source of sugar intake, which is, you know, through Milo ice outside is really sweet. And the second question would be, culturally I think we eat a lot of sweet food. You'd be surprised how much local recipes we add sugar into the food. So will taxing sugar itself be more effective than just the carbonated?
Great point. Rather
Thanks,
than subsidizing
Timothy.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Timothy made a great point. I mean, because, you know, in 2010, which is not too long ago, we actually subsidized this, unhealthy, obviously, substance that can cause a lot of problems with diabetes and also cardiac problems. But recently, I have done a little bit of kind of research, which actually surprised me that in Malaysia, we actually have the lowest sugar cost compared to our neighboring nations. I mean, for example, in Singapore, you know, it's more than three ringgit of per kilo, and it's 3.13. In Philippines, you would imagine that, you know, Singapore, maybe because of currency, is 2.85, and then Thailand 2.31, and then ringgit, and also Indonesia 2.73. We are the lowest. I was like, why is that the case, right? I mean, I think that will be a good question to pose to the minister whenever we see him again in the next Health and Living.
In the meantime, though, there is something we said this earlier in the show, but it's as good a time as any to reiterate. We did have a call from Samuel who said, why do you guys say sugar is not necessary? We need to eat carbs or we will die. So let's draw that distinction between carbohydrates and the kinds of sugar that we're talking about.
Okay, now carbohydrates, if you take complex carbohydrates like from rice, bread, your cake, your biscuits and all that, yes, they are carbohydrate sources. These are complex carbohydrates which will convert into sugar in your body. So you don't actually need to take sugar from, you know, table sugar, from sugary drinks, all that. That's not necessary. You will get them from the complex carbohydrates. So that's why we don't actually need this nutrient.
But do we need carbohydrates?
Yes, we do need carbohydrates, yes. So you don't need to go on a carb-free diet, just avoiding refined carbohydrates, which is sugar.
Well, on that note, I want to ask you, Chui Hong, like, how bad is sugar? Like, first of all, on a toddlers and children, right? You know, is it a myth or is it a truth that there's a lot of sugars make kids really hyper?
Well, I think that one is still debatable. But I think one of the main problems with excess sugar intake is the effect on their teeth. The cavities.
Right.
In fact, the dentist which I bring my kids to, she said, oh, you know, it's the exposure to sugar all the time. It's sweets in the classrooms and birthday parties. So it's the frequent exposure to sugar, and that's what's causing all the cavities. So, you know, even like children, we actually have to start from young. We have to limit the exposure to sugar.
We did have a tweet from Lin Ling who says, I think we should have mandatory disclosure of sugar content in baby milk formula.
Mm.
That does.
Yeah. And that kind of wanted... Well, and that prompted me to think, I mean, is it true that sugar is addictive? Because if we start off, you know, trying to placate our children by giving them half and half milk, for example, half and half yogurt, the rusks that we give babies filled with sugar, mm-hmm. Are we kind of breeding that sort of desire for sugar into our children and therefore causing problems as they grow up?
So they build up tolerance and dependence in some way of, you know,
needing
the sugar. Expectation.
Well, that's why I think baby food manufacturers, they really have to clamp down the amount of sugar because they are starting at the infant's stage, you know. And so the early exposure to sugars in their baby foods or baby milk makes the child used to it. I've looked at some of the baby food, like cereals, they'll have like flavoured with honey and things like that.
Oh, coated yes. with sugars.
Yes.
And
in fact, in the earlier, maybe 5-10 years ago, you find milk, when you purchase milk, it's all flavoured. It's not, you don't get plain fresh milk. It was so difficult to get plain fresh milk. Now you've got a lot more local producers producing it. But before this, it was a lot of flavoured, sweetened milk because they think people don't like milk.
Mm. Yeah. We have a call now from Suresh. Good afternoon, Suresh.
Hi, Suresh.
Hello, how are you all?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, my question is that simple. You see, WHO is more influenced by the thoughts of developed countries like the UK or the US or France or whatever, whichever countries that take part in their research. Are you guys there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, because it's so quiet. So my question is that, okay, these guys have like proper healthcare centers in place. Why would we want to follow advice of the WHO, mm-hmm. which are more influenced towards them, mm-hmm. because we do not have any facilities like what the NHS has. Because when you go to the NHS in the UK, mm-hmm. they like advise you on what to do and how to take care of yourself. But we don't have any. We are uncomparable.
Yeah. What you're arguing is that the facilities, healthcare facilities that we have is not as superior as the Western countries. So listening to WHO is pointless. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So if we want to be like, it's just in my brain is like running like this guy just because it increase the tax and increase our government revenue and more money to people. That doesn't make sense.
Well, what they're arguing is that by increasing the cost of sugary drinks, and then by 20 to 50%, actually it's going to cut down the number of obesity, tooth decays and diabetes. And, that doesn't have to have a superior healthcare system to do that. It's just simple mathematics. Do you disagree with that?
No, I agree with that. It's just that we don't have that kind of development in our country yet to tax people for. You see, when you kind of do this tax, right, it's a blank tax here. Mm. Everyone's going to be disadvantaged.
Maybe if the taxes were used for better purposes, maybe if you channel the tax which you collect from sugar tax into something which is
like subsidy healthy food.
Yeah,
subsidy of vegetables.
Food. So it makes people want to buy healthy food. Then it makes sense because then people feel, well, it's cheaper for me to buy something healthy. Why
Thanks
not?
For the call, Suresh.
We should not just follow the thing that WHO says and we want to agree with that. And
good
go
point. That's why we're having this discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, I do think that we don't necessarily have to follow every recommendation the WHO makes. But in this case, if we take the idea of the tax away, basically they're asking us to reduce our sugar. And as healthcare professionals, that's solid advice, right?
Yes, yeah. Indeed. I mean, on that point, I mean, earlier on, when you talk about sugar, you always relate that to diabetes, of course, right? Okay. So I want to ask you, Chee Hong, if somebody, let's say, has got family history of diabetes, by avoiding sugar, can you avoid the type 2 diabetes, which in many sense will be inevitable in many people who's got strong family history?
Well, just to clarify, sugar doesn't actually cause diabetes, but excess sugar intake leads to excess weight. Now, excess weight gain can actually lead to diabetes. So it's an indirect correlation. So it's not like if you're a normal person, if you just take sugar, you won't get diabetes. But if you start consuming a lot and your weight goes up and you have a lot of
abdominal fat,
then you will have a higher risk of developing diabetes. So that's where the link is.
Mm-hmm. We did have a question via text. What's the pre-diabetic blood MMOL?
It's almost like a glucose intolerance, yes. Really, isn't it? I mean, pre-diabetic state, from what I understand, is that, whenever your body's insulin system, you're developing into the kind of like...
Not so efficient, it's not working as well.
And then as a result of type 2 diabetes, pre-type 2 diabetes, and then your sugar level is above what should be normal, but not quite a diagnostic of diabetes. It's probably in the region of between 7 to 11, something like that. But, obviously, I'm not an endocrinologist or diabetologist, but that needs to be clarified.
We have a bunch of questions that have come in via text and tweet. We have Anne on the line as well, and we will get to all of you, or as many of you as we can, after this market update. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. I have Dr. George Lee and Gu Chui Hung in the house. And we're talking today about the sugar tax. We have Anne on the line. I hope Anne is still on the line. Good afternoon, Anne.
Hi, Anne.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you? I just have a very quick point. We're talking about taxes, which is a market-based mechanism, which will eventually result in food prices being passed on to the consumer, which I think is the wrong way to go because you're not educating the consumer, number one. And number two, I think the manufacturers should be heavily regulated. If you're to look at products that are from the West, you will notice, for example, items such as tomato sauce, strawberry jam, these kind of jams. None of them have sugar as the first ingredient. If you're to look at products that have been manufactured in Malaysia or around Southeast Asian region, you will notice often the first ingredient is sugar. Now, many people don't have time to look at the labels. I personally will always check the labels, but many people don't have time to do that. They're busy working, you know, the mothers or whatever. So I think the manufacturers have to be held to account. The government has to come up with very clear food regulations as to what the ingredient mix should be in the products, and sugar should not be included in there at all. Many of our products don't need sugar, but they've got, you know, natural sugars in there anyway, especially if it's fruit, for example.
Great point,
Anne. Putting a tax on manufacturers is not going to help the end consumer. We're just going to burden the end consumer even more because people don't have time to check out these things. You know, I think the government needs to be a bit more proactive here.
Yeah, and just as a health-conscious consumer here, what exactly do you want to see on the labelling of the food? Because before I asked Chui Hong to see what exactly is labelled in Malaysia by law.
Well, I want to see the ingredients. And I mean, I personally believe that, you know, usually the way the labelling should be done, I'm not so sure about Malaysia, is that the first ingredient should be the main ingredient in that product. And then, I mean, I don't want to see preservatives, for example. I mean, it depends on what you're buying. But I want to see, if you say it's strawberry jam, I want to see the main ingredient being strawberry, not sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a fruit juice, I don't want to see the main ingredient being sugar. Then I think that's misleading.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
We have to have more regulations with regards to this.
Thank you, Anne.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye. On that note, we also have Muhammad Shani Abdullah, who has tweeted in to say that we should be looking at the traffic light food label, you know, for all processed food to encourage foods with lower sugars, and saying that this is something that's been done in the UK. So why are we still avoiding food labelling?
Yeah, great point, Chui Hong.
I think traffic light system is also a good system to go by because it's a very quick way and it's very visual. You see red, okay, don't take that. Orange, okay, maybe a little bit, but not all the time. And green, you can take more regularly. So it's a very simple method of grouping foods to some to healthier options, and it makes people makes it easier for people to shop. Yeah,
We have a problem there with manufacturers, though, of course, because who wants to be a red product?
Yeah,
right?
Well, and who decides? You know, who decides what is red and what is amber?
Well,
right.
I guess this would have to be something where the stakeholders had to sit together and then draw some guidelines. And,
well, we would never agree on anything like that. You know, wants it. You know?
I think that's very unfair and very pessimistic because there are guidelines. I mean, we can disagree on things like taste.
Yeah,
we can disagree on things like that, but we can't disagree on what is healthy or unhealthy. I think this is the problem.
What's healthy and what's unhealthy can be agreed on, but how much of that is perceived as healthy and how much of that is perceived as unhealthy and to what extent is backed by evidence, it's always can be argued for or against.
Well, the thing
not
is,
when it comes to sugar. I also feel the food manufacturers think that we all like sweet things and everything has to be super sweet. But why does it have to be? I mean, why don't everybody just cut back and then just let everyone get used to having less sugar.
Less sugar.
That's where it starts with the consumer again.
Yeah. So it's not just the manufacturers, but it has to be everyone. I mean, they also, the consumer themselves have to say, okay, I'm going to start trying to take less sweet stuff.
I mean, there's one thing I want to ask you is exactly what by law is the manufacturer needs to label on the food products. I mean, exactly what is labeled, and also how many of us actually understand what is being labeled, because the sugar doesn't come in a form of glucose, right? Because it will come from fructose and it come from all sorts of labeling, because you can always hide behind those terminologies.
Yes, that's right. So in your labels, you see the macro nutrients, so you'll see carbohydrates, how much carbohydrates, and then normally they will also add in like added sugars or source from glucose. So, you know, the label will clearly state all the different nutrients there, and then you'll state the ingredients. So from the labelling, actually, you can get a lot of information. It's just that whether people
understand it or not.
Understand it is one thing, have the time to go through the whole label before they actually decide on the product. So a traffic light system works because it's quick. You know, you can just look at it and, okay, this is fine.
We have a bunch of ignored text that we'll try to get to now. Subhas says, I must confess I'm an addict. I consume 150 milliliter Diet Coke can almost daily, and the next morning my blood glucose will read 5 to 8.5. What can I do?
Oh, right.
He's on Diet Coke, isn't it?
No,
he says he's drinking Diet Coke.
Okay. Well, Diet Coke won't have any sugar. But it's probably not a healthy thing, because when you take a lot of fizzy drinks, a lot of phosphoric acid in your drink, it's probably not good for your bones. So from that point of view, it's more the effect on your bones.
Well, I mean, if he's drinking zero-calorie drinks and already he's reaching a glucose level of about 8.
It must be from something
and
else.
And then, you know, it's either from the other carbohydrate or you are pre-diabetic anyway.
And you should probably get that looked into.
That's right.
Isaac says, sugar in energy drinks like 100 Plus and Revive, etc. Is that safe to consume after a workout session?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it comes down to how much sugar you're consuming. So we have a safety level of, say, about 10 teaspoons in a day. So if you're having one, two cans, you know.
One can, you said, is equate to about 6 teaspoons.
6 teaspoons of sugar.
Can I'm just going to speak for Isaac. And Isaac, you know, if I'm wrong, you can text us back. But I think the question here is, if I've worked out and therefore have I gained more access to a higher threshold?
For more allowance.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Because that's how people think of exercise, right? I work out because I want to eat.
Yes. Yeah. But I guess it depends on why you're working out. You're working out to feel healthy or you're working out to lose weight. If you're working out to lose weight, if you've already saved, you know, you've already remove the calorie, why put it back inside?
It's okay,
again?
Isaac. You've earned it. It's all right.
What is wrong with you? Okay, we have Kyrol, who is 31, and saying, I have been having this problem. We have a lot of carbonated drink questions coming in by text. I've been having this problem for 3 to 4 years. I'm addicted to Coca-Cola. I'll have to take 2 cans every day, and it's been 3 to 4 years. But earlier this year, I finally switched to Coke Zero. Is that okay?
Well, from calorie point of view, yes.
Okay.
Because it's Coke Zero, there's no calories.
On that note, I want to ask you, Zach, you know, for someone in this situation, was that drinking 2 cans per day? I mean, I've done some research on exactly how much people are consuming. And there's a small, you know, British state, called St. Helen, and then, you know, people are drinking like 200 cans per year. On average, 200 cans of, you know, fizzy drinks. And then on average, the annual, you know, average per capita consume of soda is 154 liters. You know, is that a lot? That sounds a lot to me.
200 cans a year, that works out to be about, what?
Probably about
a can,
you know,
every other day?
Alternate days.
Yeah, that's right.
On average, that's a lot, right? Or is that just on average? This is what you see in Malaysia as well, as a dietitian and nutritionist?
Well, I'm not sure whether we actually have similar data on that. It's hard to tell. It could be somewhat similar.
Mm. One can alternate days probably sounds right.
I guess if you're dividing over, you know, a group of whole population, you know, so even so, it doesn't look that big, that huge an amount. But if you look in terms of, okay, if one person is actually consuming, we said 10 teaspoons of sugar per day. So if you're one can every other day, it seems okay.
Right.
But this data is probably, the way it's collected is probably going to be like over
a whole huge population.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you have one group taking lots of sugar and one which is not. Mm. So, you know, hard to tell.
We have Saravanan on the line now. Good afternoon.
Hi, Saravanan.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
Your view.
So I just have a couple of suggestions to make with regards to this sugar tax. Because I think the whole idea is to reduce the consumption of sugar by the public. I think the first thing I'd like to share is more in terms of my personal experience. That as far as my family is concerned, whenever we go to a restaurant, any drinks that we order is basically is kosong.
Mm. Great for you.
Means that because, for example, like Milo, right, it's already a sweetened drink. And I've actually trained my kids from young at home. Sugars are not added and milk is not added. It's just Milo alone. So when we go out and they order drinks, it's only kosong. Mm. Even for me, if any drinks, coffee or tea, it's always kosong.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm just thinking it's a crazy idea. Maybe there's a kind of campaign, like, you know, kosong campaign.
I think that was
a good idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, in fact, the minister when in the Health and Living event actually pointed out that, you know, in the old days, everyone put a lot of, you know, condensed milk into the drinks, but increasingly people are going to ask for, you know, kurang manis. That's a great point. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Saravanan.
Yeah, and actually the kurang manis thing don't really work because when we asked for Quran manis, the sugar level really didn't
yes.
come down.
Not that
I think
Quran.
We've all noticed that. Yeah. Thank you. We have also, I just wanted to very quickly say that I think there is a text and a tweet that kind of answers each other. Someone saying a sugar tax will increase the cost of products with embedded sugar like milk powder, Milo, 3-in-1. This will aggravate the economic hardship of our Malaysian families, especially low-income families. Why punish us with a higher cost of living? And we have Nick Hashidin on Twitter who said, the correct question is whether you're willing to pay extra income tax to cover for medical costs that will arise from that sugar consumption. We're free to consume sugar. The medical costs are not free. Who is going to pay for the cost of these free actions? So I think those two kind of represent, you know, opposite sides of the divide. In the meantime, we have Derek on the line. Good afternoon, Derek.
Hi, Derek.
Good afternoon.
Hi, your view?
Hi. Okay, first, about the tax, right? Hello?
Yes. Yeah. What do you think about it?
I think the matter of, I mean, our government keeps taxing us, right?
We're not talking about Malaysian government is not taxing us. So don't before everyone gets worried about this. We're just highlighting that WHO recommended it.
Yes, it's about how are they going to use that money after the tax.
Great point.
That's the most people concerned. And I do think, right, among our general public, right, we have really lack of awareness. Just go out any restaurant, any cafe, right? Just look at the drinks that we order. Most people order it all sugar and sugar added and salad. So we really need a kind of awareness to create a kind of public awareness.
Yep, agreed. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you. Right, okay. I mean, you know, obviously taxation spent on something else. You know, we talk about subsidies on healthy food. Mm. What's your view about where can the money be spent on? Apart from, you know, the cost of diabetes and, coronary heart disease and that sort of thing?
I guess it could go to various food items, fruits and vegetables, whole grains. These are some options where we can channel the funds to. Or it doesn't have to be food. It can even be
exercise.
Yes, that's right. Used for campaigns to encourage sporting activities amongst school children. In fact, when I was asking my children, in the government schools, you don't actually get very much PE time these days.
That's right.
We have Irina on the line. Good afternoon.
Hi, Irina.
Hi. I'd just like to share about for people who don't understand the effects of sugar on the body, they can watch this really good documentary called That Sugar Film. Mm. It was released in 2014. It shows the effect of sugar on the body. And I would also like to comment on the taxation issue. Yeah. It's actually a pretty sensitive topic in, I think, for Malaysians, because like a few of them mentioned earlier, it's like giving a burden to the lower income family, and that's already like adding on to the taxations that we already have.
Yes, that's right.
But some people argue that the lower income family are the ones that who are more vulnerable in terms of health issues.
Yes, I do agree on that, because someone also said if sugar was addictive. That is absolutely true, because sugar actually gives a few good chemicals in your body, and that's why people are addicted to it. And I think that's kind of like the way people enjoy the smaller things in life. So it's kind of like a sensitive thing.
But hence the sugar rush, right?
Yeah. But I think before it's actually implemented, I think discussions need to be made with the manufacturers so that they do not pass on the cost.
Manufacturers actually produce more things with high sugar because people buy it because people are kind of addicted to it. So that's the issue that we need to keep the people educated about how sugar actually affects a person. And if people were to look at how children eat and the amount of sugars that are in everyone's daily diet, even I like to indulge sometimes. And that's kind of like a thing that everyone needs to keep up on. Like, everyone has a part to play kind of thing, yeah. Mm.
Thank you, Irina.
Okay, thank you.
Also, just want to say very quickly, Dr. Robert Lustig, pediatric endocrinologist, came to public attention when he basically delivered a lecture that went viral on YouTube about the bitter truth about sugar. We have interviewed him, so you can go on bfm.my as well to look for that podcast. Just look for sugar if you would like to know more about how sugar affects the body. Just to finish off then, it's been a very complex issue. It's been a very complex show. Everybody's thoughts have kind of come in from all directions, and they've all been very valid. But for the two of you, where do you land? I mean, how do you want us to move forward in an ideal world?
Well, I think the early caller, like Suresh, actually said that, you know, WHO's recommendation, it might be applicable for Western country, may not be applicable here. So, you know, I think that I agree with that. However, you know, if there were any kind of taxation to impose on, it's not on the drinks in our society, it will be on the sugar and education, to be invest on education for the people. That's how I view. If sugar tax were ever to be implemented in a country, it's going to be a good thing, but it will be done very differently from other nations.
Yeah, I agree. I think sugar tax is definitely beneficial, but it has to be a multi-pronged thing where it's not just tax, you also have to educate, create awareness, and get everyone together on board.
And if this were to ever happen, we would need to get that conversation going pretty soon with everybody, I think.
Because
if this show is any evidence, people are just all over the park. You know, there are a lot of different opinions happening. Thank you both very much for coming in today.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Very briefly again, that Sugar film, which is a documentary that's been recommended by Irina, as well as another listener, so there you go, as well as our podcast with Dr. Robert Lustig. I think that would be a good one to listen to. Go to bfm.my or download the app. You've been listening today to Health and Living. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.